This is a show about facing fear, unlocking courage, and taking action.
Courage isn't necessarily a daunting thing.
It's going to give you more purpose. It's going to give you more drive.
It feels like making a courageous decision is going to get you closer to who you aspire to be.
It's knowledge plus faith plus action equals courage.
People often ask me, how did you know how to be a CEO? And I didn't. I had enough wherewithal to understand the things that I didn't know and know that I could gather information and go to the people in my network and ask questions.
We are joined today by a 20-year vet. Is that how you would call it? 20-year vet in the fashion, surfing, sports, wellness arena. And today you're CEO of The Good Patch, Cedar Carter. It's so good to have you on the show. How you doing? How you been?
Good, good. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for giving us a little bit of your time today. You know, where I figured I'd start is, boy, it must be so nice to be a first-time CEO navigating a pandemic. I mean, like, really? I mean, of all things. So maybe you could sort of just sort of take us back to, first of all, it's, you know, I do want to talk about being a female CEO and what the support system is like or not like, but let's first start, like, you know, did you start just as the pandemic started or before? Like, how close are we here?
Yeah, pretty close. I started in November of 2019. So just before, to give you a little background, our business was primarily a retail business or wholesale, however you want to look at it at the time, sold through independent boutiques and spas across the country. And we were just starting to build out the D2C side of the business. So it was interesting timing.
And I'm curious, you're navigating, I mean, you're still navigating personalities, the founders of the business. And I guess I should say full disclosure that, you know, my team, we've had a chance to work with you and work with some of the founders. And it can be challenging sometimes working with founders. I'm not saying it is with your founders, of course. But how did this opportunity start for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're lucky because our three founders are just wonderful human beings with huge hearts. But they found me through one of their board members, just kind of mutual network, I guess you could say. And I interviewed with the board member first, and then, you know, he passed me on to Betsy, who was the acting CEO at the time, and we just really hit it off. And I loved the concept that they have, you know, how bright and fun the packaging was and how clear the value proposition was to the customer. So I always love a challenge. You know, it was interesting for me. As you said, I've been in apparel almost my entire career, which I absolutely loved, but was ready for something new. So it's been a really fun challenge, you know, interesting timing with the pandemic and everything, but a really fun challenge to jump into the CPG world.
Well, you know, I guess I should cover myself. Like, we've met Betsy, we've met we've been able to talk to David and Kelly, and yeah. Like, David is my jam, by the way, like, is too my creative guy, you know. But I'm curious, how much grace did they give you? As I mean, Betsy probably knew because she was the CEO, acting CEO, but pandemic hits, like, did you have, like, they're like, oh my gosh, or were they still like, let's hit the gas, we have to go now?
You know, I think with any founder, and, you know, founders come from all different backgrounds, right? But with any founder, their company, especially at an early stage, you know, seed stage or pre kind of major fundraising, it's their baby and they're really handing you their baby. And a lot of times companies don't hire CEOs that early on. Usually one of the founders is acting as a CEO. So they really were in a place where they realized that, you know, they weren't coming from corporate America. They realized they were onto something that could be big, but needed some help to get there. And they really, I have to hand it to them, they did a wonderful job at staying involved, but kind of letting me lead and deferring to me on bigger business decisions, but giving input when I needed it or support when I needed it. And they kind of said, hey, we're going to, you know, we're going to report to you from now on. You tell us how we can be the most helpful to you, which was really probably a pretty unique experience and pretty amazing.
I mean, you've seen some pretty big brands. Like you said, you've done Quiksilver. I think there's Roxy in there. I think there's performance brand 2XU to name a few.
Yeah, 2XU. Yeah.
Right.
And O'Neill.
But then you also have, and I love this about you. You've not that every CEO, you've got the marketing and the PR side, you know, you got the story side and being so close to Hollywood. I mean, I think you're in Hermosa, right? Like you've worked with celebrities. Do you feel like when you think about what's possible for the Good Patch, how did all of this sort of help you go, oh, this is kind of like the right job for me?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's kind of two main things to a consumer products company being successful. I mean, there's a lot of things really, but you know, if I could boil it down to two things, it would be, you got to have a good product that people find effective. And so, you know, the Good Patch checked that box very clearly just by the kind of really organic, authentic traction that they had. And of course, I tried the product before I came on board. And then the second thing is building a brand. And so I was kind of looking at it from the outside in, like, do they have the initial kind of branding and secret sauce that makes a brand go? And I think that they had done a really great job. David, you know, I'll give David a lot of credit because he did a lot of that early work in the packaging and initial branding elements. And they were positioned really nicely to be successful. So I said, okay, there's a lot to work with here. And I know, you know, from my branding and kind of marketing and building brand background that I can truly build a brand out of these elements that are here.
I guess for the viewer that may not know what the Good Patch is, can you just kind of serve up what is that?
Yeah, the 30-second overview is, you know, we make wearable wellness patches for everything that life throws your way. So basically, our founders took the patch technology that's been around for decades and very proven serious applications like birth control patches, for example. And they use that technology and applied it to the everyday things that, you know, you and I experience most days, like you're tired or, you know, you're stressed out, you need to kind of relax. For females, you know, period cramps, things like that. Maybe you have a big night out and you have trouble, you know, I'm in my 40s and I have trouble bouncing back like I used to. So just those everyday need states that we all experience.
Yeah, it really is a pretty special idea. You know, and I think when I think of the Good Patch, you can't help but think of, well, the Bad Patch. And like, not that it's bad, but like smoking nicotine, I feel like people used to wear a patch and that was sort of like the pioneer in the patch arena. And now, you know, it doesn't have to be nicotine. It can be, like you said, when it's time to be calm or relax, you've got these good patches for all. I think I like to say this is something that we'd come up with for all the feels, right? Whatever you want to feel. So is it going, you know, is it going how you thought it would go?
Oh, I mean, absolutely not. You know, does anything ever go how you think it's going to go? You know, especially with the pandemic thrown in there. But, you know, I feel very grateful. It's been a really, really great experience, which is what I've wanted out of it. I wanted to, you know, learn the CPG industry and be able to kind of put my stamp on something and say that I grew something. And we've certainly done that. You know, we've had massive growth over the 3 years that I've had the pleasure of joining the company. You know, we're in all Targets nationwide. We're in Ulta Beauty, CVS, you know, over 10,000 doors now. And I got to go through our, you know, take us through our Series A fundraise, which was, you know, a whole nother job and learning curve in and of itself, but thankfully successful. And we've built a really great team, both internally and with our, you know, board of directors and the people, our investors that are backing us.
So I'm curious, where did you personally get the business bug from? Like, was it something that, you know, you knew one day you wanted to be a CEO or there was a mentor? Like where did that come from for you?
That's a great question. And I don't know that I have a great answer. You know, my parents, to give you background, I mean, you know, my name is Cedar, so you can probably guess at my upbringing, but I had, you know, complete, you know, live off the land, very hippie kind of parents that were, you know, just living to their heart's desire out in middle of nowhere on the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State. So, but I always had this internal drive to kind of get out there and do something big. And I can't quite pinpoint it to any one thing, but I've just sort of always had a drive to succeed. And that kind of goes across my life, I guess, in anything, whether it's sports. I broke my wrist a couple of weeks ago being way too competitive. And, you know, I think I never set out to be a CEO. And I think early on in my career, I probably would have said that's not my end goal. It kind of really naturally happened, which I know sounds funny. I had a drive to succeed, but I always thought that path would be in marketing. And then I got to a certain point in my career where I just, to be honest, was a little bored and felt like I wanted to learn something new. And I've always had a very kind of math brain in addition to the creative side. They both sides fulfill me in different ways. So it was, you know, somebody gave me an opportunity along the way and said, I think you can do more, and gave me that opportunity, which I'm very grateful for.
I mean, how critical, and I don't want to sound like a Hallmark card here, but like when somebody does transfer that belief and is like, you got this, you can run with it. Well, first of all, I'd love to know who that person was. But second, do you feel like that is a multiplier in all this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you can have confidence in yourself, but someone, you know, someone at a higher level in their career saying, you know, actually, I think you can do way more than marketing. I think you can actually do this whole other job over here. Yeah, it kind of gives you that validation to try it. I don't know. I knew like I was ready to take that step, but I kind of didn't quite know how to go about it. So absolutely. And her name is Pam Levine. She gave me that opportunity to branch out. I was hired under her as a VP of marketing, and she gave me the opportunity to branch out into a GM role that was initially over the D2C and brand side of Few Times You, which is an Australian-based activewear company. And then I eventually ended up running all of North America, reporting into the CEO in Australia. So it was a great opportunity and definitely a very steep learning curve, but I enjoyed it.
I mean, talk about, it was a serious performance brand, wasn't it? From what I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, they are very, very serious. You know, they do a pretty good business selling directly to all the professional sports leagues in the US and elsewhere. So, you know, if you see the Lakers, they're, I think, sponsored by Nike or whoever it is. But when they're coming off the court, boarding their plane back to wherever they're going, they're wearing Two Times You compression recovery tights and a lot of that. You know, things that you would see on professional triathlons and athletes is Two Times You.
So I know you said, you know, you weren't setting out to be a CEO, but here you are, right?
Yeah.
And I am curious, as a female CEO, like now that you're here, like, were you always more conscious of female leadership, or are you now? Like, do you recognize, like, why aren't there that many more female CEOs in this space?
Right. I feel like that, you know, there's a popular saying right now, you know, see it to be it. And I agree with that. I think it's funny, I worked in the apparel industry and I started in kind of, you know, higher fashion and then went over to lifestyle. But a lot of those companies were run by men and there were not a lot of female leaders, to be honest. So yeah, it's interesting. And I think now I am much more aware of how hard it was to get here and how few of us there are. But as a result, I think there's phenomenal networks. Now I have access to just a wonderful network of female founders and CEOs and people in leadership positions. And I found that people, there's so few of them that they really want to be connected. So they reach out via LinkedIn or you meet them, you know, through school or the neighborhood or whatever, they really want those connections and to be able to talk about, you know, how can we help kind of groom the female leaders underneath us to get into these positions a little easier than maybe we had it.
So obviously this is a show about courage, right? This is the Courageous Podcast.
Yeah. And
when you think about the role today, and you know, you're leading a team, and like you said, it has gone exactly not as planned, right? In some ways, yeah. Right? It's messy. Yeah. Where do you feel like you've seen or displayed like just a brave moment or a courageous moment in the business that you can share?
Yeah, I mean, I think I used the most courage in just taking the leap to come over to a whole new industry. That was very scary, to be honest, because you have a lot of doubt. Like, is my skill set transferable to this whole other, every industry is its own language, right? And then once I got on board, I think, you know, the business very quickly was going in a great direction, and then COVID happened, and overnight, you know, literally overnight, I think on like March 15th or whatever it was when everything closed, our business essentially went to zero because we were almost, you know, but we're very heavy on the wholesale side, and all, I think 100% of our distribution closed. And so, you know, I had to make really tough business decisions, keeping in mind that we had this very small, but very, you know, a lot of it was literal family staff. And so I had to make the tough decision of how do we keep this business alive during this time? How long will it last? I had to do a round of layoffs very early on during that time, furloughs and eventually layoffs at when it was not, you know, we knew that the pandemic was not ending anytime soon. So those were really tough decisions. And, you know, I tried to do it with as much empathy and grace as possible, but while still making sure that we all had a place to work. And we came out of it, you know, really wonderfully. You know, we did our first mass market partnership with Target, who was a retailer that was still open during pandemic times. We put a lot into the D2C side of our business and scaled that enormously. So it all worked out in the end, but it was tough.
No, there's no worse part too than like letting people go. It's just
that's the worst.
There's no good way to do it. There's definitely wrong ways to do it.
Oh yeah.
Right. But I could see how that's the case. And I, now that you said you've sort of leaped into this, I mean, you've been in this new vertical now for some time. So like, okay, here are the two lessons. Usually people do three, but that's a lot. So like two lessons that you're like more similar than I thought. And give me one where it's more similar than I thought. And one where it's like so far away from what you've been have done before.
You know, I think the basics to business are similar, but the language is completely different. So it's been interesting because the basics of building a brand and, you know, being strategic in your distribution and, you know, whatever, little things or big things, I guess, like watching your cash flow and managing a P&L. Like, it's all the same no matter what type of business you're running, but the language is completely different. And what I realized is Google is your friend, right? You can be on these calls and they're speaking a different language and you can just, you know, figure out what the CPG lingo is compared to the apparel lingo. It's an interesting thing. And I think something that can be very intimidating, but is actually really simple when you get down to it.
I recently was like ran into this little parable. It's the story of the cow and the buffalo and how they each deal with conflict. Have you heard the story before?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Story
time with Ryan Berman, right? So yeah. So we'll start with the cow. So a cow's natural reaction when it senses a storm is coming, and cows are slow, is to run away from it. So okay. they can feel the storm coming. You know, if the storm's moving from west to east, the cow is gonna move as far out east to try to outrun the storm. And of course, problem is cows are slow. Like the storm will catch a cow, but because the cow continues to try to run away from the storm, it actually spends more time in the storm than if it just stood still and never moved at all. Now the buffalo takes an entirely different approach, right? A buffalo senses a storm coming, and the second they sense it, they're running towards it, right? If it's west to east, the buffalo's going west. It's going to move headfirst into the storm. And just by going into it, you know, you'd almost think it's counterintuitive. You spend far less time in the storm than the cow, right? So give me one scenario where you have been the buffalo, where you're like, I know the storm is coming. I have to go right at the storm. We have to go now. We're going to be in the storm, people. But let's go. Give me one example where you play buffalo in this scenario with the business.
I mean, you know, I kind of already used it, but it's the one that jumps to my mind the quickest is, you know, when COVID was coming and all of our retailers were shut down, I knew that I had to make a decision. I couldn't kind of wait and see what happened, right? I had to make a decision based on the facts that were immediately in front of me in order to have a business, you know, 3 months from then. So unfortunately, I've you know, been through quite a few layoffs at different companies over the years for various reasons. And so we executed kind of a complete restructure and office closing and all those things very, very quickly. And we're able to conserve cash and kind of get through the storm really quickly versus, you know, I witnessed a lot of other companies kind of taking the wait and see approach and kind of burning a lot of cash, waiting and seeing and not coming out the other side, maybe at all. So I agree. It's good to be the buffalo. I'm not a procrastinator. It's funny. I just had this conversation with some people on my leadership team because there's kind of two types of people, right? There are the people that like want to get it done, so it's not like a stressor hanging over your head. And then there's the people that wait until the 11th hour and then are super stressed and stay up all night doing it. And I am just so the opposite of a procrastinator. I like to get things done and move forward and create space in my mind for the things ahead of me versus being stressed about the looming things that I could get off my list now.
So if you weren't doing this job, what would you be doing?
Oh, good question. I have no idea. I mean, I think I'm someone that's curious and I like to learn. So I think my career would have taken some sort of turn or pivot. You know, I've always done something that's meaningful to me. So, you know, whether that's apparel or wellness, or I've always been involved in the fitness world, I think I would have stayed in kind of those channels of health, wellness, maybe food, which I love. But yeah, I don't know. That's a hard question. I don't have a good answer. What would you be doing?
Well, I mean, obviously I'd be a podcast host, right? If I wasn't
obviously
consulting on a regular basis, what would I be doing? I mean, I love sports.
Yeah.
You know, I just love competition, you know, and I'm also the first to say, like, if you beat me, you deserve to be me. Cause I usually am prepared. I'm going to throw the usually in as I get older. Right. So I'll be the first one to shake your hand and like, be like, you got me.
Yeah.
Look, I think, you know, putting the energy back on you, obviously you would be a basketball coach, right? You know, and will you share a little bit about your story at home and if you don't mind and what you have later on today?
Yes. So I think I would be a volleyball coach.
Okay. Volleyball coach.
But no, I do. I have two young kids, an eight-year-old son and a 10-year-old daughter. And we are a very sporty, athletic family. And, you know, I think it's important for kids to try all different sports at this age. And so I have two little basketball players. My daughter plays volleyball and all sorts of other things as well. But I'm coaching my second graders basketball team. We have a big game tonight. And I will tell you, getting second grade boys to focus and pay attention is maybe the biggest challenge of my entire career.
That's serious bravery right there.
that's serious courage. I don't know if I would do it again knowing what I know now, but no, I'm kidding. But yeah, I do love coaching. I used to coach gymnastics growing up. I was a dancer and a gymnast early on and then transitioned to basketball and volleyball and other sports, but continued to coach all the way through college and really, really enjoyed that. And that's how I paid my way through college. So,
I mean, it seems like you've been fairly deliberate on, you know, pretty much doing stuff that you're passionate about, even in your professional life. Is that like a conscious effort, or is it sort of just that's how it happened?
It's a conscious effort for sure. I think, you know, it was the way I was raised. You know, my parents were, you know, chose to kind of live sort of off the grid, not sort of like very off the grid, you know, and kind of follow what they were passionate about. And so I think it's always been important for me to do something that I enjoyed. And I think I recognized early on that money is not the driving factor in my life. It's doing something that I enjoy, and the money will come, I think, if you are doing something that you enjoy. You know, there was lots of times early on in my career when I was making no money doing marketing in the fashion industry and living on, I think, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But so it was tempting to do something different, but I really knew that in the end, I would be able to give more and put more into something that I enjoyed doing. And it, you know, you spend the majority of your life at work, sadly. So I think it is really important to have a base level passion or joy for what you're doing on a daily basis.
I mean, when I step back and look at the good patch, it does have this cool factor to it. You know, like you said, first of all, the product works.
Right? Yeah.
Although I don't know, like, government, like, is this, like, who approves this stuff? What's the deal with, is it an FDA? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, you have your two regulatory agencies in the U.S., basically FDA for anything kind of, you know, food, drug, you know, cosmetic, anything that you're putting onto or into your body. So they regulate that sort of thing. And then the FTC from like a marketing claims. So
how much of a burden are those to the business, if you don't mind me asking?
You know, that's been, I think, an interesting thing. We dealt with some things on the apparel side, but, you know, over into the CPG world, it's much different. So, you know, it is a burden, I think, financially in a sense, because every single thing that you're putting out there, if you're doing it right, you're running through some sort of regulatory consultant to make sure that you're within the guidelines, right? And so it adds a little time and obviously money to the process. So from that standpoint, it can be challenging. And then of course, there's things that you know would be amazing and that your consumers would love, but you just can't do it based on, you know, having to work within certain guidelines. So that can be
do it or say it.
Right. Do it or say it. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, you might be able to do it, but you can't say it.
Say it, right. Yeah, because I mean, I could say it because this is not an advertisement. Like,
yeah.
Product really works. It's, you know, you throw on Relax, you can feel it working like right away. But again, I'm not going to try to pretend to be the marketing director here. You have that person.
Yeah.
I could see, could be an issue. What can they say? What can't they say? That's all part of the business. Yeah. Being so close to LA, and I think, you know, you made a choice. Well, you're in Hermosa. Maybe that's a choice.
Technically LA, yeah.
Technically LA. You have navigated spokesperson, celebrities. What's that like? Like, how much of a challenge is that world?
Yeah, you know, it has to come, I think, in order for it to be successful, it has to come from a really true place of authenticity. You can't just attach a celebrity's name to something and have it be successful. But the partnerships that I think have been the best have been when that celebrity or professional athlete has had a real passion for what we're doing and wanted to create a product hand in hand, you know, for a reason. And then you know, I try not to work with anybody that's too full of themselves. So I always kind of pre-select for people that I think are truly wanting to be there. And then that makes for a better partnership. Because if they're just being paid to do something, put their name on it, it can be very, very difficult to work with them. But if they're there for the same end goal and also have a passion for what we're producing together, then it can be really fun. So
this is, you have a matador out on this one. You can olay this question if you want, but I imagine that there's like, if the energy is just like when you hear that this person loves the product, like it's back to you that like, and it's authentic and it's organic, like we should do something with them. Is there like a story you could share where you heard like, this person absolutely loved the product and they want to meet and they want to hear more. Is there one top of mind?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you kind of a, you know, an interesting, like the world gets so small story, but you know, there's a supermodel by the name of Taylor Hill, who's just a wonderful, wonderful human being. And I met her when she was, I think, 15 years old. And I cast her for one of her very first modeling jobs at O'Neill. And, you know, continued to work with her for a number of things. We had her, you know, it's kind of funny now because she's like this huge supermodel, but we worked with her on our e-commerce shoots, which are, you know, smaller photo shoots. And then we were doing a fashion show with Teen Vogue and she walked the runway. And that is her very first fashion show that she ever was in. And she was traveling the world recently, I think about maybe a year ago, and she was doing something for Fashion Week and she was going on a very long plane ride. And she found our products at Target. She found the Dream Patch and she picked up Dream and B12 Awake and she used Dream on the plane and said she had the best, you know, night of sleep on the airplane. She was doing a photo shoot wearing a suit the next day. So she wore the B12 Awake patch through her suit and she just fell in love with the product, truly not knowing anything that I was involved with the brand or anything. And then she did a What's in Your Bag for Vogue, I believe in France, in Paris, and she highlighted the good patch and you can hear her enthusiasm. We didn't pay her for it. And we just, obviously it got back to us and she's so excited talking about the product because she had this true experience. And so she actually reached out to the brand to see if we wanted to collaborate in some way. And then we realized the connection between us. And so we're on the phone, we're on a Zoom talking like this. And she, you know, showed me a photo that she had the framed poster of that very first fashion show that she ever did that I produced when I was at O'Neill. So just like a full circle moment. And we haven't done anything formal yet, but she continues to be a very strong supporter of the brand. So those are the types of partnerships that I love, you know, the ones that come about just very naturally.
Well, first of all, like, all right, here we're coming down the home stretch anyway. So as a CEO and as, you know, and I'll give you the first one of these. I was going to say, if someone has sort of stayed around for the episode, right, they're clearly passionate and interested in what you're doing. And what I love most about this story is like, you just never know. Like,
yeah,
right. Assuming the values align, we'll call it that way. Reputation matters, relationships matter. So like, what are the, you know, it's called the Courageous Podcast. So like, what are the 2 to 3 takeaways you hope the audience takes away from this conversation?
Yeah. I mean, I think a couple things. One, treat everybody with respect because the world is very small and you never know, you know, where people are going to be and how they may help guide you along the way in your career. Could be an intern that, you know, helps you get your dream job down the road. You know, the value of network and just being respectful and taking the time to have those informational interviews or connections along the way, I think has been incredibly valuable to me over the course of my career. And then of course, to be courageous and just have the confidence to, you know, people often ask me how, you know, how did you know how to be a CEO? And I didn't, you know, just I had enough wherewithal to understand the things that I didn't know and know that I could gather information and go to the people in my network and ask questions. And I think any intelligent person can figure anything out. You just have to, you know, understand and do a little research on the things you don't know and make an informed decision. And that's like 99% of leading a business is making informed, intelligent decisions. And everybody can do that.
I mean, you're basically a coach, right? Whether you're coaching a coach to the team, the Good Patch team, or the coach to, you know, the basketball team. And good luck tonight. Knock them dead. You. And really appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time. We're obviously huge fans of the Good Patch. Where can people find the brand? Like, where would you send them first?
Yeah, I mean, thegoodpatch.com, of course. But then any Target nationwide, Ulta Beauty, CVS, or even Amazon.
And do you have a favorite patch?
Oh, yeah, of course. I love Be Calm and then also Rescue. Don't judge me, but Rescue is absolutely amazing.
I'm so glad you didn't go. I love all my children equally. I'm so glad you at least picked a lane and was like, no, I have favorites, no doubt. Yeah. All right, Cedar, thanks so much for joining. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you too.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Courageous Podcast. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts so more people can find us. See you again next week.